Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 202, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. We've got a lot going on. Not a bad day for a five-hour midnight ride taking you all the way to 5 o'clock. We got the unbelievable Mets as they took down the Philadelphia Phillies yesterday and now hold a 2-1 lead as they'll take on Philly again today in Game 4 with a chance to end that series and get ready for either the Padres or the Dodgers in an NLCS that will be tough. Both of these teams are very good. The Dodgers currently have a 2-1 lead in that series. So right now, if you think about it, all the Yankee fans who are panicking about being 1-1, I mean, this is baseball. The Dodgers down 2-1, Phillies down 2-1, Tigers in Cleveland tied. These series are tough. And playoffs are a crapshoot. And I'll get to the Yankees later. Maybe we'll do some Yankees as they get ready for a big Game 3 as well. Clark Schmidt on the mound tonight in a Game 3 that's very important. And I mentioned something about, I want to talk a little bit, when we get to the Yankees a little bit later, I do want to talk about the thought of how they might handle their pitching staff. I talked a little bit about it last night, maybe get back into that conversation because I find it fascinating. How the Yankees handle their pitching staffs in games 4 and 5, if they win tonight. 888-808-1019, McMonagle here with you. And plus, we got the Jets firing Robert Saleh, shocking everybody. I saw the video of Sal's face when they told him. It was hilarious. Sal was just like, what?
Both of their faces were pretty good.
Yeah, it was like, what? It was almost like, I don't even know what to do with that right now. It was such a shock that it's almost like you need 5 minutes to like contemplate how you feel about it.
Yeah, like take a break, process what you just heard.
Like, they just fired Robert Saleh. And it's funny, too, because, you know, Mike had put it out there. I still listen to Mike's podcast. You know, he's Francesa. He was calling for it. He's like, they'll never do it, but they should. And I heard Beningo suggests that if this Buffalo game goes poorly, that he thinks that Robert Saleh could be on the hot seat. But I think most people felt that Woody Johnson and this Jets organization wouldn't do it midseason. That clearly if the season didn't go the way they wanted, that he would be gone at the end of the year. But I don't think many people thought that Woody Johnson would come to this conclusion, let alone after 5 games, where, yes, they're 2-3 and underachieving, and the last 2 games in particular have been hideous. But they are playing for first place tonight. Not tonight. This week against Buffalo on Monday. They're playing for first place. I mean, they have everything in front of them, as a great manager once said. The Dolphins are the Dolphins without Tua. The Bills are one of the worst 2 or 3 teams in the sport, maybe worse than that. And it's just the Bills. They have an opportunity to beat the Bills on Monday night, and suddenly they're in first place. It's a very, very strong move. That's the one thing you have to admit. Like, Woody Johnson had a very strong indication that this needed to happen. Something pissed him off. He's gotten, someone got in his ear. Or many people have gotten in his ear that this just had to happen. Because you don't do this unless you feel it had to happen. 888-808-1019. Chris in Shrub Oak. What's up, Chris?
C-Mac, what's up?
Yo, what's up?
You know, you just said the Jets are playing for first place. Well, you know something? If Greg Zuerlein hits the field goal and he completes a pass to Garrett Wilson, they're fan-winning in first place.
Yeah. And, listen, if Zuerlein hits that field goal, there's a chance Robert Saleh is not fired today. That's how crazy life is.
If one of those things happens, he's probably the head coach, though.
Yep. That is crazy. You see the ramifications of a missed field goal. It's crazy.
Yeah. But the other thing wanted to tell you was, I was listening, I was telling Fleece that Kay Adams' podcast, she had on Luke Kuechly, I think his name is, the old linebacker from the Panthers.
Luke Kuechly, yes.
Kuechly,
what did he say?
He was saying that, you know, there's not enough, you know, that offense they run doesn't have a lot of motion, and the way the running back lines up, you know when a running play is coming, is pretty much what he said.
That they're predictable.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think right now it seems, and again, I am not a football X's and O's guy. I've never coached a team. I have an idea of some stuff, but it does seem very vanilla. It seems very straightforward. Right. It seems very, you know, not a lot of shifting, not a lot of movement. It's a lot of Aaron Rodgers making decisions at the line. Like, that's how he's run his offense. That's him and Nathaniel Hackett. And we're hearing that. We're hearing all that, too. We're hearing that we've never seen a coach, an offensive coach, with as little confidence as Nathaniel Hackett, and how he leaves every decision up to Aaron Rodgers. And it's just, it's all about making Aaron Rodgers happy. Like, it's a weird relationship between the two of them. And it felt like it was one that was successful. And now it feels like it's one that might be hampering the team.
But the thing is, like, even Fleek said, like, that play on Sunday, 4th-and-1, and Brees Hall's 8 yards.
Makes no sense.
Behind, isn't that the head coach's job to go to him and say, listen, what are you doing? He's 8 yards behind Aaron. I don't understand that.
Isn't it the quarterback's? Like, I'm not saying you're wrong. Is it the coach's job? I guess he's the last line of defense, supposedly. How about the Hall of Fame quarterback? Like, how about the Hall of Fame quarterback? That's why you brought him here. I heard Evan's rant on it. He's 100% right. Like, that's why you brought him here, not to hand the ball off on fourth and one, a long one. Like, it should be up to Aaron Rodgers. You brought him in here because, Zach Wilson would be clueless to that type of change. Like, wait a minute, we're 4th and 1.5 yards, and you're lining 9 yards out in the backfield. I got to get you 11 yards from where you are right now to get a first down. Doesn't that seem ridiculous? Like, where is the Hall of Fame quarterback? Where is this is supposed to be him and this coach have an offensive relationship that has won MVPs, and he doesn't pick up this small stuff? And that's not to dismiss any blame on Robert Saleh. But ultimately, Robert Saleh needs to be the last line of defense, but where's Rodgers on the field making this decision? This is on him. I put it on him. I do, more than I put it on the coach. It's enough on the coach where you consider everything else. You put it in a pot, he gets fired. Fine. But, I mean, the 4th-and-1 play call, me and Fleece have been going back about this. Like, it's an indictment that Saleh isn't connected enough with the offense. And I've always found it puzzling that defensive coaches stick to defense. Like, if you're a defensive coach, your opponent is offense. Wouldn't you feel like you know something about offense? Wouldn't you know something about how the defense is lined up and what the weaknesses of that defense would be? Like, we use the term all the time about complementary football. Wouldn't you think complementary coaching would make sense too? Like that, hey, I know I'm a defensive coordinator, but when I'm in this look, you know what I'm worried about? I'm worried about this. Like, doesn't that make sense that he's not involved? Or that he's incapable of being involved because he's a defensive coach? Like, I always find that stupid. But to me, it's more of an indictment on how the Jets have operated this thing than it is on why isn't Saleh helping. They made a decision to have Saleh not be helping. That's the problem for Robert Saleh. Not so much why is he lined up 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Where's the head coach to say, no, don't run this play? You got to trust your offensive coordinator. I don't know. Dwight in East Orange. What's up, Dwight?
How you doing, Nick? I'm a big Dolphin fan, but listen, mm-hmm. I've been listening to the things about the Jets all training camp about how they had talent, how they were Super Bowl contenders, but I see the same Jet team from last year. If I didn't know any better, it looked like the same quarterback from last year. Everything looked the same. To me, they just don't have a lot of talent. There's really no speed on the offense. The offensive line is still bad from last year. You got a 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles. He's not the same Aaron Rodgers. Remember the last year he played on Green Bay before he came to the Jets?
Yeah.
And you see they wasn't that good, but you see when Love came in, they were a lot better.
The next year, yeah. He had a thumb injury. I was willing to get again, we did see Thursday night against the Patriots, and I know the Patriots are bad, but like we did see that. We saw him move around, we saw him throw the football, and we still see great throws. And I think they do have some speed. I think Breece Hall's pretty fast. I think he's a home run hitting back. No? I mean, Mike Williams is a 50-50 guy who can get down the field. Garrett Wilson should be able to run a little bit. I mean, I don't think they're slow. I'll give you the 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury. There's a chance he's washed. That is absolutely a chance. There is a chance that Aaron Rodgers is just straight up washed. And we saw signs of it that last year in Green Bay, and now it's finally here. That is off of a major injury. That is without question possible. I've seen, well, I shouldn't say that. I haven't seen enough to make that decision. And I did see something special in that game against New England. Not super special, not, you know, guarantee that he's not washed special, but that's the best quarterback performance the Jets have had in forever. Arguably my lifetime. I mean, I guess that's not fair. Mike White threw a bunch of touchdowns against Cincinnati. I mean, they've had a quarter. Sanchez won multiple road playoff games against Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. So I get it. But, I mean, that level of quarterback play is not seen in this town very often. And now it's gone right back down the tubes. It's very hard to explain. Joe in Brooklyn. What's up, Joe?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Great show.
Thank you.
No, on your point, when you just said Mike White, in terms of the last caller, I think this is the first time I see a Jets offense that even if the plays aren't working, the quarterback is making the right reads. We did not have that with Zach Wilson.
Right.
He was lost out there. Aaron Rodgers, he might not make all the plays. He's not connecting with Garrett Wilson yet, but he's making the reads. It looks like an NFL offense, and as a Jets fan, I will take that.
No, I hear you. That the idea that you've got, yeah. I mean, listen, you'll take Aaron Rodgers, and I haven't seen enough to just be like he can't play. Well, is there a chance he's not as good as we all hoped he was? Fine, but he's still going to be a serviceable quarterback. That with the rest of this roster, I'm sorry, I'm going to let you go, Joe, just because a lot of noise. I think in my mind, the worst that Rodgers could be, like the absolute worst he could be this year, is still a quarterback that with this roster can have you competing for a division, have you competing for a playoff. Like with this defense, with the weapons they have offensively, especially if they add Devontae Adams, at his worst, he's got to be a serviceable quarterback that can still win you games with that roster. Like, right? All right, maybe he's not going to be the Hall of Fame quarterback that uplifts you to become a Super Bowl contender, but at worst, he's got to be good enough to win a bunch of games, right? I don't know. We'll see. But it's just, I thought in game one he came out and showed me enough to make me have some confidence. Game two, they played well in the second half. They came out ridiculously slow against Tennessee, played better in the second half, found a way to win a game. Then the great performance against New England. I mean, that was Hall of Fame Aaron Rodgers. And my fear is now that's a cruel joke. Given his one last screw you to Jet fans, that they got to see that for one night, and they'll never see it again. Like, that's what it feels like right now. But that was a great night. And now it's been followed up by just two awful offensive performances. So I honestly, I don't know.
I don't know how good he is. I don't know what he's capable of, but I'm not ready to just give up on this team right now. And neither is Woody Johnson. The one thing I will say, it was decisive. They're bringing in a coach who is a little bit more of speaking his mind than Robert Saleh, I would think. Maybe he'll try and, because of the failings of Robert Saleh, try and get more involved in the offense. Because, again, you can't tell me a defensive coach has no idea what he's looking at when it comes to offense. So hopefully he'll be more involved. We'll see if they continue to give Hackett the play-calling duties. I would imagine they will. And we'll see if they can snap out of this and win a game that would put them in first place against Buffalo. Mike in Thomaston, Connecticut. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing,
Chris? Hi, Mike.
How you doing, buddy?
How's it doing? How's it going in Thomaston?
It's a small little town. We're not like New York.
Nah, yeah, I don't know if I've heard of Thomaston or taken a call from there. You're my
no,
first.
I'm 7 miles north of Waterbury. I know you get a lot of calls from Waterbury. Anyway,
yes.
I mean, if you don't think Aaron Rodgers had anything to do with Saleh getting fired, he's the head coach.
It's tough not to think
he's the head coach. He's the GM. He's everything on that team.
Yep.
And you can't let a quarterback, any player, be in charge of a team. That's where the Jets made their first mistake.
Yeah. When you say in charge of a team, I have less problems with him bringing in wide receivers he's worked with before, like Cobb and Lazard.
Now you're going to bring Adams in?
He's
dead. And that makes Garrett Wilson, what's Garrett Wilson going to be, number three, number four?
No, he should be number two, but he should be number one
all the time.
Yeah, but
Garrett Wilson should be the number one.
I don't disagree with you, but has he been?
Well, because Rodgers don't like him.
No, I don't think that's it at all. Him and Rodgers says nothing but great things about him.
I don't know, man. I think you guys are giving Rodgers a pass.
I'm not giving him a pass. I just said that I think it's more I blame him on the field, not even necessarily that he's running things or he got the coach fired.
What we've seen on the field.
I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just saying that's not what I'm more concerned with what we've seen on the field. And what we've seen on the field for me is more about Aaron Rodgers than the head coach. I put the blame more on Aaron Rodgers than I do the head coach. The background noise, I don't think you're wong.
That's a great comment you just said right there. Because he couldn't score a touchdown against Denver.
No, I understand.
How do you not score a touchdown against Denver?
Well, I mean, their defense actually is better than people think, but
I understand.
You got to get a touchdown.
But if he's Aaron Rodgers, shouldn't he be able to score a touchdown?
Of course, no. Every defense in
the
NFL.
He's not the Aaron Rodgers that everybody thinks he used to be.
Yeah, I mean,
he's older.
Oh, no, of course. Well, I mean, but 5 weeks in, we have seen it 1 week. So we did see it against New England. Against New England, he was the Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but that's one out of
Not good enough. Totally agree. But we at least. But I'm just saying, in my mind,
you're a good guy.
Thank you. In my mind, I've seen it where I know at least I've seen it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it'll come back. I'm not saying I guarantee it, but I know it's in there on some level. He did it 3 weeks ago. It's not like he did it 3 years ago. So, but you're right. Not good enough. Not good enough to only do it once out of 5 weeks. Not good enough. This roster, not good enough to be 2-3. Not good enough. And Aaron Rodgers, to me, has a lot to do with it. Whether it's the missed, you know, he has Garrett Wilson for a touchdown down the sidelines. He misses the throw. He missed a bunch of throws. I felt like he's even done a poor job picking up blitzes and allowing himself to get completely blindsided. The cadence thing, I mean, that's on him and the offensive line that he's been working with. That's on them. Like, a lot of this falls at the feet of Aaron Rodgers for me. A lot. 888-808-1019. I'm not giving him a pass at all. I'm just saying that in my mind, if I bring in Aaron Rodgers, I don't love this. This is the final one. I know, listen, it's a slippery slope. And you want to say I'm being hypocritical? You probably got a fair point. This is where mid-season firings of head coaches to protect the offensive coordinator I love and adore, who's been miserable, that seems like a bridge too far. Cobb, Lazard, even certainly Devontae Adams, reasonable if you're going to bring in a 40-year-old Hall of Famer. I think that's reasonable. The idea he wanted to keep his offensive coordinator off a year he didn't play, I think that's kind of reasonable. He wanted the tandem that he decided to join with of Douglas, Saleh, and Hackett when he never got to actually play out that season to see if it worked. And if you were 50-50 on the coach, allowing the quarterback's decision-making or thought process to sway you one way or another, even that seems fairly reasonable. But if it's straight up, I've had enough of him, get him out of the building, plus he's going after my guy, like that. Once I've seen this not work for 5 weeks, now with every poor performance, Rodgers' strength and power inside the organization wanes. With the injury and never playing, it was hard to wane because you still had to see it. Now we've seen it for 5 weeks, and it's bred 2 and 3. So now, all of a sudden, for me, the power, as if I were the owner, would start to wane. And I'm like, wait a minute. If we all think what happened was he wanted to get rid of, Saleh wanted to get rid of Hackett, Rodgers said no way and went to the owner. If I'm Woody Johnson and the quarterback who looks every bit of 40, who couldn't score a touchdown, and again, I don't care what the offensive game plan, what's going on, who's the weapons, Aaron Rodgers has to be able to score a touchdown against the Denver Broncos. But this quarterback who can't get in the end zone at 40 years old off an Achilles injury comes in and says, hey, you know that coach that I kind of wanted to keep? Yeah, he's got to go because the imbecile running the offense needs to stay. I would have laughed him out of the office. If I felt he had to go, that's one thing. But this is the bridge too far. Aaron Rodgers can't come in and go, you know how I'm leading this whole thing into 2 and 3 right now? Yeah, I need other people to go because it's their fault. I wouldn't have been too happy about it. 888-808-1019-223. McMonagle with you all the way to 5 a.m. on this five-hour midnight ride. We're about halfway through talking Mets. Talking Jets, obviously, and Robert Saleh. We'll start to get into the Yankees. A little bit of Giants, too, because as we talk about a coach that was nothing but a pom-pom wearer, nothing but a cheerleader, nothing but just standing there on the sidelines with a dumb, sort of stupefied, unexpressive look on his face, we got another coach coaching a football team in this town who just took a team on the road and won a game nobody expected him to win. And he doesn't just stand on the sidelines. He gets involved. And there's a piece of audio, and I'm curious to really draw the distinction between the two head coaches, one who got sent home and the other one who right now is leading his team and starting to garner feelings yet again of year one, where he took that team to the playoffs.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With, dare I say it, Daniel Jones.
Start some trouble and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
So I suppose one of the perks of working here, besides the idea that I talk about sports for a living, that's the major perk. Although the negative is, I'm telling you right now, I'm hoping that you won't be able to tell. One, I'm hoping it never happens. But one, I'm hoping you're not going to be able to tell. But if the Yankees do not get to the World Series, whenever their elimination day is, I hope it's on a Saturday night so I don't have to be here on Sunday, because it's one of those things. That's the tough part about it, is having to now come on and rehash my misery when I really just want to go crawl into a ball and forget the world existed. But one of the perks, besides just being able to talk sports for a living, is there's usually, every once in a while, some free stuff, right? Or and specifically, there's a lot of free drinks always laying around. And there's a sponsorship, I guess we have, with Celsius, Live Fit. And Celsius, if you want to, you know, do any business in the overnight, energy drinks seem to be something worth catering to an audience of people up in the middle of the morning. I don't know. Seems logical to me. Name's Chris McMonagle. How are you? For all you Celsius folks. And I got to tell you, this is the first time I felt the need. I told you I didn't sleep very much because Robert Sala woke me up. And I couldn't get back to sleep after the stunning news. So I felt like I needed something, and I went and got an energy drink. And this is one of the more odd combinations of flavors I've ever had in my life. And I'm debating whether or not it's delicious, just okay, or I'm going to go search for another flavor. And I'm trying right now. Sparkling mandarin and marshmallow. I have never heard of mixing orange and marshmallow. Now, I guess that's creamsicle, kind of. It's kind of like a creamsicle thing. And when I was a kid, I was all over creamsicles. But sparkling mandarin marshmallow. It's not bad. It's not bad. I think I like it. Mikey likes it. One more time. One sip, everybody knows the rules. That's actually pretty good. Okay. I did want to play a piece of sound from Brian Daboll. And that Giant victory, was really impressive and surprised the hell out of me. And for them to go down the field the way they did, get to the goal line, fumble, have a 14-point swing on the recovery touchdown, and then to come right back and go down the field again and play the game they played, both defensively, getting after Geno Smith. I know he threw for a lot of yards, but to get after Geno Smith, sack him as many times as they have, after a first real 2 weeks where it felt like they didn't get after the quarterback to lead the NFL in sacks now, is just impressive. Dexter Lawrence continues, maybe had one quiet game among the five, but he has been a force. He is one of, if not the best, interior tackle in the game. And I think Brian Daboll has really done a tremendous job. And I'm feeling so much better about him than I did last year. Feeling so much better about him than I did even in the early part of the season. And despite only being 2-3, I'm just feeling a lot better about the Giants situation overall. That's what one win will do for you in the NFL. But as we're talking about Robert Saleh and doing nothing and being nothing but a cheerleader, there was a bit of coaching being done by Brian Daboll, yelling at the offensive line. And what he says, how he says it, and, you know, I'll play it for you here. And hearing it will do it, will get, give the gist of it. Watching it is even better. If you have an opportunity to go on Twitter and just, I don't know, if you search Brian Daboll, I'm sure it'll come up. I love what he said too, but this is him on the sidelines of the Seattle game with the Giants screaming at his offensive line.
The level of expectation we need to have. We got to pull that color hot. We got to nail that guy, all right? That's when you turn it. That's when you turn this. You expect it. Got me? You work together. You move on to the next play. Expect it. The level of expectation we need.
Yeah. The level of expectation we need to have. And maybe that's what holding players accountable is. A level of expectation. I don't know, as we're trying to figure out what holding players accountable means. But he says the level of expectation, there's a level of expectation we need to have. And then he's like, expect it. Expect the play to work. Expect the guy to be where he's supposed to be. Expect to have to make the block that's designed to be made. Expect it. Expect to be successful. I just love that clip. I don't know why. Maybe I saw it today right after the news of Robert Saleh being fired. The idea of Brian Daboll and whether or not the Giants have a head coach has been something that has bothered me because I felt like there was an answer. I know after year one with Joe Judge, there was a little bit of a feeling that there was an answer. I mean, they lost a ton of games. it was the worst division in the history of the sport that allowed them to play somewhat meaningful games down the stretch of that year. And just it felt like, okay. And he's certainly better than McAdoo and Shermer. The opening press conference was spectacular. Like, it seemed better than what it has. All right, maybe the Giants have a coach. I feel okay about the Giants head coach. And then we all know what happened next year. So when Robert Saleh came here, and you didn't have to think, excuse me, Robert Saleh, when Brian Daboll came here, and you didn't have to think anymore, and you didn't have to ask yourself that question, do the Giants have a head coach? Because it was obvious from day one that they did. It was so refreshing. It was so wonderful. And he changed the entire feeling of the organization and the fan base. All in one year, made a playoff game, won a road playoff game, and it felt like, well, at least we've solved that issue. And then last year happened. And he coached differently. He coached scared, which we've still seen remnants of in this season. But he coached afraid. You know, the game plans were terrible. Again, he had the kicker situation again early on in this year. I mean, it's just he didn't learn from mistakes. Like, up until recently, everything has been downhill on how I feel about the coach. And I got to tell you, the last couple games, I've really started to feel a lot better about Brian Daboll. And specifically, this game against Seattle. Because his team easily could have folded against one of the going on the road across the country, one of the tougher buildings to play, 12th man and all that, against a team that is perceived to be a playoff team. Let's just leave it there. A playoff team inside this NFC. And not only did they go in there and be prepared, but they went in there and got a kick to the junk immediately. And it didn't stop them one bit. It didn't change them. In fact, it seemed to piss them off and they played better. They went in there without their best offensive weapon in Malik Nabers. They went in there without their best running back, or at least their starting running back. Tracy might be their best running back now. But they went in there with two big-time injuries to the skill position players for that offensive group. And Daniel Jones distributed the ball all over the place. The play calling was exquisite. The game plan was executed perfectly. And while they still didn't put up, having said that, it's still frustrating that everything I said, and they still can't put up 30 freaking points. But they did everything you could have asked of them in that spot, on the road, versus that team without Nabers. And then I see that clip, and I'm just like, the coach is back, baby. Dable's back. As one door opens, somebody opened up a Dable window. As Saleh gets kicked to the door, someone let Dable in the window. I'm very excited about the Giants head coach.
Can you imagine how pissed Robert Saleh is going to be when he learns that a head coach is allowed to coach his players during a game? Like if he sees that video? I was allowed to talk to them?
Yeah. This whole time. You know what? Let's get to your feelings on it, because I know this is we didn't get to your Met. We'll do that again at 3 o'clock. We'll play some Howie Sound at 3. We'll get to Fliegelman's experience at the game, which I'm sure was tremendous. But I know you feel a little bit differently than me, because I can't cry that it happened. I don't know if it had to. I don't know if it's going to help. I don't know how I feel about it exactly. I can't argue it, because that's the kind of head. He's been a bad head coach. But you are, I'm assuming, in the Jet fan camp of, I don't know if it'll help, but it needed to happen.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I was calling for him to be fired for a long time now, so it had to happen.
Okay. It had to happen. He was so inept that he had to go.
Yeah, I don't think in any of the responsibilities of a head coach, and you kind of hit on some of it earlier.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that, oh, well, the defense was good and he's not paying any attention to that's an indictment. When you're the head coach, mm-hmm. you have to be involved with everything. I always loved Rex and defended him and hoped he would start to take on more of a role with the offense, but he never did, and his time ran out. When you're the head coach, you have to be in charge of the entire operation. So whether Saleh was ignoring the offense and just focusing on the defense, that's a fireable offense. Or if he was trying to get involved with the offense, and in these 4 years, the offense, and I know obviously there was a talent standpoint, it's why I was on board with firing him in the offseason, but I also understood, okay, they want to see what he can do when there's talent around, and it's just yep. him on his own merits, no Zach Wilson holding you back. Okay, I can live with that. But when you're the team that just gets your ass handed to you every first quarter, every first half for 4+ years, and you commit so many more penalties than your opponents every game that you're playing, all the it has to be on the head. Like, these are the responsibilities of the head coach. When everybody defends Roberts, oh, well, the defense is good. Well, that's the job of the defensive coordinator. Up until yesterday, the Jets defensive coordinator was not named Robert Saleh. He was named Jeff Ulbrich. Mm-hmm. So even if that were true, it's still a reason that the head coach has to either change or get fired. And from what we've heard from players, I was obviously, you know, I wasn't here with you Monday morning. Right. I was helping Jerry out with the remote. So listening to all the sound from the Jets, it wasn't just Rodgers. It was all the players, really. Garrett Wilson, maybe more than anybody, talking about they have to figure out what's going wrong, whether it's their preparation. Just we heard the quote from Woody yesterday in the conference call, kind of doing the same things over and over. There had been that belief that Saleh, there had been reports for years, the travel, all of it, that he was kind of stubborn and set in his ways. That just doesn't fly when you're the head coach. Like, there's more. You have a better job. You have the, you know, the job that pays you millions of dollars. There's more responsibility. And if you can't live up to it, a lot of guys can't. They go back to being coordinators and they thrive in that role. I'm sure that's going to happen for Robert Saleh. And maybe he gets another shot. Maybe he finally, now that he's been fired, will learn from it and move forward. We've seen that happen a ton of times in the NFL. But right now, when he was given the chance to, hey, this is the job you need to do, he proved that at least right now, he's not capable of doing it well.
Okay, and so I agree with a lot of what you said. Certainly the play in the first quarter, first half penalties, 100% on him. I don't care. And I don't care which side of the ball the penalties happen on. The pre-snap one's a little bit, I thought Rodgers would fix it, but I agree with you. All right, so now what's your hope that, like, one, do you think it will, just on the mere idea that they got rid of the coach who, and now that just by nature of having a different person in that role, things will at least change. We don't know for the better or not, but at least, you know, a coach who is going to do things differently, which might just be a fresh introduction with this team. But what's your hope on what Ulbrich could bring to this team, and can it make an impact that does change this offense? Because whether or not it's an indictment on the coach, he's gone now for the sake of this, you know, for what's going on and the sake of this conversation. The offense still is the problem, though. So how do we fix that without making changes to the offense?
So I think if you're the Jets, what you have to hope is that Jeff Ulbrich learned from Robert Saleh's mistake, or biggest mistake. But I mean, he made many, unfortunately. One of them was, you know, the reason Robert Saleh got the job, he blew Woody and the rest of them away in that interview. And we saw, remember all the clips from him as the 49ers, the fiery guy on the sidelines. Then he came to the Jets, and he's just this immobile, stiff, like there's no, you just played that video with Daboll. I can't even remember Saleh pulling aside a player and just, hey, like a quick 10-second chat about what you did wrong, what you did right, what we like. Like that, Ulbrich has to be, maybe, you know, there are limits, but you can't go crazy over the top. You're the head coach, but he has to find that happy medium where Saleh just, I think, restrained himself too much to avoid either seeming emotional or adequate, whatever it was he was looking to avoid,
right. He
went too far. So Ulbrich hopefully will learn from that. And, I mean, listen, we all know whatever happens, Nathaniel Hackett is a bad offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Like,
the world knows that, but he's coordinated successful offenses before. Really only one or two out of many years, but he had that year in Jacksonville where with Blake Bortles, who was trash, and Leonard Fournette in his rookie year, where they were a top offense, where they did go to the AFC Championship game and almost beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
And I would imagine back then Doug Marrone had a huge hand in that. So Ulbrich, one, I agree, I've thought it forever. If you're a great defensive coordinator, you must know something about offense. Because, and we've had this chat off the air many times, because if you can stop offense, that means you have to understand something about it.
Of course.
I want him, now that he's the head coach, the Jets could be benefiting from one thing Saleh did, was he kind of let his coordinators run the show at times, and the position coaches did a lot of work. So if Obrick can get in those offensive meetings, kind of, you know, just change one or two things to start. This is kind of what I want, you know, one or two things, maybe small, how just get in there, make small changes at first, just clean up the operation a little bit. I think they can be better. And that's where then you would count on the talent taking over and making them much better than we've seen on the field in the last couple of weeks. And a big this one, I think you can work with Hackett. The one I don't know how they fix is Keith Carter, the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
He was a disaster in Tennessee. Players hate him. He was Saleh's guy. I don't know how you fix that midseason, other than you probably should have fired him too. But I'm optimistic. I think if Obrick, who seems like a smart coach, there's the videos of him from the Senior Bowl. If you get what it looks like Jeff Obrick can be and has been as a coordinator, if he translates that to a head coach the way Robert Saleh, for whatever reason, refused to, I don't even know, sometimes couldn't, it seemed like he just wasn't willing to at times, then I do think that change at head coach can be beneficial. And I've said this so many times with the Jets, because every time it seems, well, how can it get worse? Can they finally have a coach who has a clue how to handle the clock? Like, at some point, does somebody in that building know what to do with timeouts?
I know.
Like, it's sooner or later, you would think somebody would accidentally kind of know
what
to do there.
I know.
And maybe it's Jeff Obrick.
I know, it's true. And it's funny, too, because, like, you mentioned the first half. Like, it happens at the end of the game, too, but it happens with the Jets seemingly more at the end of the first half than I remember or that I realize with other teams. Like, it always seems like, because you see a lot of times at the end of the games when the game is on the line, it's not like the Jets are the only team. It happens where you're like, why would you do that? And certainly what we just saw Buffalo do. But, and that's not necessarily, it's kind of clock management, but whatever. But it also, just even at the end of the first half, sometimes it seems like they are just.
And that's another, right? Be more
ridiculous.
Aggressive sometimes at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
If you're not going to use the timeouts because you want to save them to the final minute, which is something Saleh said, he had learned his lesson in game 2 years ago, but never really showed it.
Yeah.
If you're going to not want to use the timeouts there, then have the offense move a little more tempo.
Right.
Whatever these one or two changes are to start, the caller mentioned Luke Kuechly saying the Jets don't use a lot of motion. And I mean, there's been reports that Rodgers maybe doesn't like a ton of that, but that's where you tell him, hey, I'm not going to change a lot of what you do with this offense. But as the rest of this team comes together, we don't have to do this forever. Let's get some guys in motion more just to help you out a little bit at the line. And you tell Hackett, get the play call in faster. So if Rodgers has to or wants to change it, he can do that. Have somebody in motion a little bit more, you know, up at 5-10% of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So it can just help Rodgers in the key of, all right, at least I know with that one guy on defense, what his responsibility is. Make it a little bit easier. Just clean things up. Make it a little tighter. And see where you can go from there.
I refuse to believe that Aaron Rodgers wouldn't be open to something like that. Like, you have to recognize the offense has been trash. Like, I can't imagine that he wants to continue to put this performances out there.
And I think people look back at the Green Bay days and forget what he asked for there was he wanted input. He thought they completely shut him out. You know, he liked the guy that he developed a rapport with in training camp, the 6 wide receiver. But they cut him because they wanted somebody else on the roster. And it's like, well, if he just likes the guy to
Why
be the
not?
Last spot on the roster, just give it to him.
Yeah.
And he saw that, you know, the Bucs would do stuff like that with Brady. This is a Woody mistake where, because again, I don't think Joe Douglas was like, hey, yeah, let the quarterback make all the decisions. Or Robert Saleh was like, yeah, you know what, let me let the quarterback make. This was a Woody thing that hopefully he's scaled back on. Rodgers never asked for, you have to let me make every single decision to run the team.
Right.
He just wanted to be a voice in the room.
Right.
Jets overcompensated, went
way too
far. But if you come to, you know what I think Aaron Rodgers wants maybe more than anything? He wants
win.
To win because that's how he proves everything wrong.
100%.
He's vindictive. He's petty. The way he proves everybody wrong is only one way. You've talked about it. It's also the only way the Jets ever stop being this laughingstock.
Yep.
Win.
That's it.
And if he can do that, if he thinks and respects Obrick, and it seems like the players do respect him, do love him, if they think there are ideas in that room, that's sitting in there and, you know, maybe Saleh was sitting in the offensive meetings, but he wasn't chiming in. If you're Obrick now, you have to be a voice in that. You're the head coach. You have a voice in every room. And if you fail, if it's a disaster, well, we find that out.
Yeah.
But when that's your title, you know, I don't think Brian Daboll goes into a lot of rooms and at no point, he might sit, observe the entire meeting and say, okay, these are my takeaways.
Yeah.
But when you're the head coach, that's just what you have to do.
Absolutely. No, it's been a failing, and I think sometimes we've learned to be, you know, the Judge was the, you know, neither offense nor defense, the game manager, and that's failed too. You want, and I think in today's NFL, you kind of do want a really smart X's and O's guy or a really good guy on one way of the ball, the other, but he does have to figure out it can't just be, I'll allow my quarterback to run the offense and I'll be the defensive coordinator. Like it was a failing thought. And ultimately, probably will cost his job as much as anything else. But
you just said my favorite thing. We've had this conversation before. Like, my belief for head coaches, and this is just a belief. It's obviously not everybody has to feel this way. But I need you to be really good at one thing, whether that's the X's and O's or the leadership, not motivation, leadership, and getting guys to not just play for you, but buy into what you and your coaches are teaching them and buy into, like, so that's different than motivation or whether that's the overall game management. I need the head coach to, at the bare minimum, excel in one of those areas.
And he excelled at nothing.
And people have started to take on, oh, well, the defense is good as being one of those areas.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. That's the job of the defensive coordinator, not the head coach. We've seen guys be great at one, not the other, and vice versa forever. This was just one of those cases.
Well, it's finally over. All the consternation, all the worry about it, all the whether or not Saleh should keep his job, they move on.
So I have to ask you, did you see, do you get notifications? I know you said you saw it and you couldn't stay awake
or
go back to sleep. Because I woke up, saw a bunch of texts from Jets fan friends of mine in group chats. So I just assumed the Davante Adams trade had happened.
Right.
It wasn't then until I opened them and went, oh, wow.
That's...
And then I said, too, this was before my alarm went off, and I was just awake for the rest of the day.
No, I know. That's what happened with me. Same exact thing. I rolled over. I saw a bunch of text messages. I think it was like 40 or 50 from like my buddy's group chat. And when I just figured out, oh, what the hell, I could probably still go back to sleep after this. What's going on? Are we making fun of Parnello or what's going on? So I looked at it, and it was like, you know, it's almost exclusively Giant fans for whatever reason. Most of my friends are Giant fans. And it was, you know, laughing and making fun because they're mad at me because I'm rooting for the Jets. That's kind of what's happened in my life at the moment. I've got Yankee fans mad at me. I'm rooting for the Mets. I got my Giant fan buddies pissed at me that I'm pulling for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. But that's what happened. I was getting mocked in the group chat for saying that they're a Super Bowl caliber team. And he's like, 2-3, 40-year-old quarterback just fired the head coach. Super Bowl caliber. I don't get it from just callers. I get it from friends and family. That's how it works. Because when you put your opinions out there and you're supposed to be Mr. Sports, you know, and you're currently out of a playoff position in your fantasy league, they're going to mock you. 888-808-1019. But it's all over. We'll find out if Ulbrich can bring that change. We'll see if Rodgers can start to play better because it is about the offense, whether or not the coach got fired. It's about the offense. So that needs to improve.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.